I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about dogs. We're going to talk about the best ways to care for our canine friends during the summer months, about the do's and don'ts of dealing with heat and other warm weather challenges. My guests are Don Contos of Indianapolis Animal Care and Control and Fido Vice President Darcy Kurtz. Please join the conversation. You can call us at 866-476-3881. Our email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking about dogs today, about summer dog care, about what's legal, what's not, and what's best for your dog. If you would like to join the conversation, and I know many of you pet lovers are likely to do so, you can do so by giving us a call at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Don Contos, who is with the Indianapolis Animal Care and Control, and Darcy Kurtz, who's Vice President of FIDO, that's Friends of Indianapolis Dogs Outside. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Well, let's start by talking about some of the big dangers for dogs during the summer, things that we'll start with the pet owners. I know that we can also talk about interventions when you see a dog being mistreated and all of that, what the options are. But first, let's assume that everybody who is a pet owner wants to be a responsible pet owner here. What steps should a responsible pet owner take with a dog? And, Dawn, I guess I'll start with you.
Well, as far as if we're talking about summer heat, I would say that make sure your pet has fresh water, has access to indoors, air conditioning. I personally like air conditioning, so I think my pets do too. And this is a time to leave your pets at home. Don't take them to the store with you, to leave them in the car. That's not a good idea.
Darcy?
And I would agree. And my group, Fido, deals with dogs that live primarily outside. And so we do encourage people, even if their dogs are outside dogs, that when the temperatures become really, really warm, bring them inside, even if it's in the basement. You know, some people are just unable to bring their dogs inside in their living areas. But, you know, when the temperatures become over, 80, 90 degrees, dogs are miserable out there, especially dogs with longer coats, chow mixes, shepherds, husky type dogs. Bring them inside, especially during the worst part of the day, so which is roughly, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
10 a.m. to 4 p.m. I know you're speaking sort of your speak and all of that. We probably ought to make it clear to everybody.
In cases where if that's just not possible, one thing that is really important for outside dogs is to have some kind of shade. So just a shelter, just a doghouse out in the sun is not protection, from the sun, from the heat. So, there's got to be some overhead shade, whether it be trees or a shade tarp. And like Don said, it's crucial in really warm water that and it's a legal requirement that dogs have access to fresh water at all times. I mean, that's, to not have water in this heat becomes life-threatening.
Well, and that raises another question, which is, what does the law require in terms of, we can talk about first what the best practices are, but we probably ought to talk about what the minimum legal requirements are here so that people understand that certain practices are just flatly against the law.
If you're going to leave your dog outside unattended, the law requires here in Marin County that you have the dog have, I'm sorry, access to shelter. That means three walls, a roof, and a floor. It must have access to fresh water. Food is mentioned, but we do understand that, you know, sometimes the dog eats all the food at the first meal. So that's not necessarily something that you would be cited for unless it was apparent that the dog had not had food in a long time. If they are tethered, there's a whole slew of rules that go along with being tethered, including working swivels on both ends. The chain must be sufficient for the dog. So we don't necessarily recommend chains. A tie out is better, but if you're going to use a chain, it can't be a heavy chain that weighs the dog down or prevents it from moving quickly.
You don't put a 20-pound chain on a poodle.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and honestly, a 20-pound chain is pretty much anybody.
Yeah.
There's nobody who needs that. You know what? I lost my train of thought.
I'm sorry.
I'm focused on the 20-pound chain now.
my apologies.
That's okay. It also must have a collar, a traditional collar, not a choke collar, not a rope tied around its neck, what else do we see? We see the prong collars. None of that. It has to be just a regular collar that doesn't tighten when the tether pulls to prevent choking and things like that.
And one other tethering requirement is that the tether has to be at least 12 feet in length.
Very good. They also have to be spayed or neutered if we're
the
animal
the
that's being tethered. Yes.
Has to be spayed or neutered if it's going to be outside.
Unattended.
Yes. And how many infractions do you see during the course of, say, a typical summer?
We see a lot of dogs without shelter, dogs without shade, improper tie-outs. That's not necessarily something that's going to make us take your dog away. It's just going to be something where we send an officer out to educate you on what is required by law. That's the minimum standards that the city has set forth. We see a lot of improper collars, embedded collars. You put a collar on the dog and then the dog grows, the collar doesn't. So, and that's very dangerous for the dog. We have had some dogs die, actually, from that. Mm. So you have to – I personally am a fan of bring your pets inside. Don't leave them outside nonstop. But Darcy's group works with people who do have outside dogs to help. So,
and we do work to help transition those dogs inside, especially in extreme weather.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about summer dog care, what's legal, what's not, and what's best for our canine friends here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. You said that, Dawn, that, if a dog is, mildly improperly tethered, that's not something that would prompt animal care and control to come and take the dog away. Mm-hmm. Under what circumstances can a dog be taken away from the owners?
It generally requires a warrant and some sort of threat to life if we feel the animal is not going to be able to continue living. That's when the officers will seek a warrant. But in most cases, we just want to help you be within the law. We have plenty of animals at the shelter. We don't need any more. And so it's best for the animals and for our shelter if the animals can stay in the home and the owners can just be educated. In a case where we've been out several times and the owner continues to not understand the information that we're giving them or continues to violate the ordinances, that's when we would in something a little more minor, that's when we would seek to take the animal.
How often do you have to do that?
We confiscate. It's daily, but we cover all of Indianapolis except for the excluded cities. So
you have to rescue dogs on a daily basis from
not
people.
Me personally, but yes, our officers are out
your
there.
Your officers.
Yes.
So if you assume is it every day of the year or every day of the summer?
We have something going on every day of the year. So
okay, so we're talking at least 365 pets a year having to be rescued.
Last year we took into our shelter just over 14,500 animals. Now, not all of those are confiscations. I'd say, if I had to guess without the statistics in front of me, probably about a third tend to be confiscations.
So nearly 5,000 over the course of
a year.
Of a year what happens to those animals?
It depends. If the owners can get themselves within ordinance, and usually they will have to go before a judge, and if the judge believes that they can get on board with the program, so to speak, he might release the animal back to them. If the animal is released to our care, we will evaluate it. You know, can we put it on our adoption floor? Is it something where it's got a medical issue and it needs to go to rescue? There are many rescues that we work with, over 100.
And in that legal proceeding, I realize it probably shouldn't be. This may be more legalistic than anyone cares about, but normally, you know, if you're in some sort of legal process and you're a human being, you either are your own advocate or you can hire someone that you direct to be your advocate. Who serves as the animal's advocate?
We do.
You do, okay.
And the prosecutor also. We have specific prosecutors assigned to the animal-related cases, and they are the animal's biggest advocate.
We've gotten a question from a caller who didn't want to go on the air. What should someone do if he or she sees a stranded dog, but he or she is nervous to call Care and Control due to the fear of the dog being put down? Either one of you. I can see you both nodding
right.
up and down.
And,
Darcy, go.
And that's a case where I think there's a misperception about animal care and control that it's a death sentence if an animal is impounded, and it's clearly not. And like Dawn said, in most cases, the officers try to encourage, get the owners to improve the conditions of their dog. And actually, my group, you know, partners with Animal Care and Control, where we can follow up and help people come into compliance with the ordinances, you know, reaching a kind of at least a minimum level of care. So in my opinion, and I come from the rescue world, that, you know, living out in, you know, brutal conditions where the animal is suffering is much worse than being impounded at Animal Care and Control. And like Dawn said, I mean, the life release rate has gone up. What
it's
is it now?
Skyrocketed. Last year it was 73%. 73% of those 14,500 plus animals had an outcome that they lived when they left the shelter. They either went to rescue, they were adopted, they were returned to their owner. And that's up drastically from previous years.
So about 3 in 4 chance, mm-hmm. basically.
And the ones that we are euthanizing, mm-hmm. These aren't animals that would make great pets. These mm-hmm. are not animals that we feel would be suitable for our adoption floor. Either they're aggressive or they have health issues. Even when we have to euthanize for space, we're going to take a look at the animals that we think we can adopt out or that we think we can find rescue for, and we're going to make those tough choices. It's certainly not easy, but we are choosing based on who we think we can save.
And Darcy, if you would, tell me a little bit about your organization, about how you got started, because obviously it's driven by a love of these dogs.
Right. We formed Fido 10 years ago, realizing that there really was no organization out there focused on these dogs that are living on the end of a chain. And in our opinion, that's no life, you mm-hmm. know, living on the end of a, you know, a short chain to a doghouse. So, you know, we decided, okay, we're going to be those dogs' advocates. And in doing that, we have to work with the owner. And unlike Animal Care and Control, they have enforcement authority. They can go out and say, okay, you're in violation of these ordinances. We're going to require that you make improvements or we're going to impound your dog. We can only offer our services, which we do have quite a variety of services to offer people. And typically people are receptive to our help. And if they're not, then, and the conditions are really egregious, then we will get Animal Care and Control involved. But typically, when we offer our help, people are receptive, and we do improve the lives of these dogs.
What services do you offer?
We offer dog houses, straw in the winter, training crates, and guidance on bringing the dogs in the house, at least at night, to comply with the anti-tethering ordinance that requires dogs to be removed from the chain overnight. We offer flea treatment and fly repellents for dogs that are living outside, kind of battling those infestations. We have a pet food pantry, and all of our services are contingent on spay-neuter, which we can offer for free.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about summer dog care, about not just what is legal in terms of taking care of your canine pets, but and what's not, but also what is in the best interest of the dog, what's the best ways that we can take care of these animals that we love. My guests are Don Contos of Indianapolis Animal Care and Control and Darcy Kurtz, who's vice president of FIDO. That's Friends of Indianapolis Dogs Outside. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about summer dog care, about, you know, what practices are legal, what are not, and really what is best for our canine friends. My guests are Don Contos, who is with Indianapolis Animal Care and Control, and Darcy Kurtz, who is vice president of FIDO, that is Friends of Indianapolis Dogs Outside. Stephanie, welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. Am I on?
You are indeed. What's on your mind?
Thank you.
Certainly.
I'm a dog lover and a local pet sitter, dog walker. And where I live, I can hear this dog barking all night. I'm pretty sure it's tethered or else it could be in its yard, but it's out all night, which I thought was against the law. And I recognize it by its bark, but it lives in a street that I'm too scared to go down by myself at night to get its address. And I know you have to give the address of the dog to report it to ACNC or a group like FIDO, and I'm wondering what I can do because I don't know which house exactly it's at.
Thanks very much for the call and the question. We'll see if we can get you some guidance. Take care. Stephanie. Thanks.
It is not illegal to have the dog outside at night. It's only illegal to tether it between the hours of 11 p.m. and 6 a.m. And we really do need an address to send an officer out. We can try with just a street, but she'd probably have to send us kind of a guesstimate of where it was. It's not something we can normally
Does it have to be verified that you know, does she have to hear it and know that it's tethered between 11 p.m. and 6 a.m. for you to have a cause to investigate?
If we know it's tethered between those hours, then we would absolutely send somebody out. If it's just out barking and it's a nuisance complaint, it changes the nature of the complaint. A barking complaint requires about 2 weeks of a log, keeping track and corroboration with neighbors. It can be sort of a complicated process, but it's also difficult to prove that a dog has been barking continuously and therefore disturbing the peace.
Darcy, is there any way FIDO can help with this? Do you have some big men who don't mind walking down the streets late at night?
It's mostly big women. But, we're all women. So, and we do offer our assistance in some of these cases and I understand a lot of times people are afraid to report their neighbors. They feel like, you know, they're living a little too close and that puts them at risk. And so we will get involved in those cases in cases like this where they don't know the exact address, we might go out there and try to verify the address. And, you know, we're careful and we work in pairs. And but I know the fact that the officers do need an exact address makes it difficult sometimes. And so, feel free to give us a call and we'll see if we can help you.
How should Stephanie do that if she wants to get in touch with you?
Yes.
And I should say, Stephanie, the other way you could do this is just send us an email and we'll get it to FIDO or to Animal Control as well. But
we do have a helpline. The number is 317-221-1314. It's a voicemail system.
Go ahead and give it to them again because people do not ride around and listen with pencils in hand.
317-221-1314. And we will call you back. We don't answer the phone. It's a voicemail system, but we will respond and see how we can help you.
We've also gotten an email from a listener named Chad, and if you would like to reach out to us by email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Chad says, I am listening online from Elkhart. Well, welcome, Chad. We're glad to have you on board. What are the steps one should take when one finds a dog locked in a hot car, even with the windows partially cracked? Call 911. Is there a statewide ordinance preventing this, or is it strictly local control?
As far as I know, it's up to local control. You can call 911 because that's a life, a threatened life. In Marion County, I can speak to Marion County only as far as the laws go, but in Marion County, it is illegal to leave your dog in a car when extreme heat or cold are going to threaten them.
How do we define extreme heat or extreme cold?
Well, that tends to be up to your discretion. The officers, some of them have tools that they can measure how hot it is in the car if it becomes a situation where they need to go to court. But essentially anything over 70, I think it's 72 degrees for outside temperature in the car, it can reach astronomical temperatures pretty quickly, over 100 degrees in the car. So I would say if it's warm enough to drive with your windows down, then you need to leave your dog at home.
Okay. And how often do you have to deal with those sorts of complaints?
It hasn't been as bad this summer, but the weather's been a little bit milder so far, although technically we're not too far into summer. If it's something like that where there's a life in danger, sometimes IMPD will be called out more because they can arrive more quickly than we can. They have a few more officers on the streets than we do.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the best way to take care of your dogs during the warm summer months. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Ron, welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
I have what's going to be considered an unusual question. I don't think anyone else is going to ask it, so I thought I would. For the first time in my life, for the last few years, I don't own a dog. But this question has bothered me for years. As far as having an animal spayed or neutered, it's my understanding that pretty much the same operation, no more difficult, no more expense, that an animal can either have a vasectomy or a hysterectomy instead of spay neuter, and consequently the animal does not lose a sex drive and the possibility of gaining excess weight is reduced because of the operation.
Well,
is that true or not?
Well, and I will grant you, Ron, we've done shows on dogs before. That is the first time someone has asked that question. So thank you. Thank you very much for the call and the question.
Sure.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Sure. Okay. Which one of you would like that one?
Well, I actually work at a spay-neuter clinic, so I think I would be the appropriate person to answer that. So first of all, there is no such thing as a vasectomy for a dog. I mean, it's the neuter surgery, the testicles are removed. There is a new option out there for people. It's called Neuterin. A lot of the clinics are not using that, though, and that does – it sterilizes a dog, so the male dog cannot – reproduce. However, the testicles are not removed. And in terms of a female dog, I mean, there's only one procedure, and that is removing the, the reproductive organs. So,
why is the first one it's called Neuterin?
Zuterin.
Mm-hmm. Zuterin. Mm-hmm. Why is that not used often? Is it because it's more expensive, more dangerous,
more?
Well, yeah, it's a new option. It is more expensive, and it doesn't remove the testosterone, the male sex hormone, which does drive a lot of negative behaviors that impact aggression, getting loose, seeking mate. So, but it's an option for those people who can't bring themselves to actually neuter their male dog.
And we haven't talked yet about the importance of spaying and neutering. We probably ought to address that right now. Real quickly, why is it a good idea?
14,500 plus animals came into our shelter last year. That's why spay and neuter is so important.
And are most of them just animals that no one wanted?
They're either unwanted or stray, and most of our strays are going to be roaming because of that sex drive, the need to breed.
And really, so many of our animal welfare, animal care, and treatment, animal control issues stem from too many animals. And so I think we all agree you get the number of generally the number of animals, the number of unwanted animals down, and we can take so much better care of the animals that we have.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Shannon. If you'd like to send us an email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. You also can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Shannon asks, what recourse do owners have who know their dogs but helpful neighbors turn the owners in? I know it's summer. I'm thinking of a friend with Great Pyrenees that love being outdoors in the winter, but who now have to keep the confused dogs inside because neighbors who don't own large dogs called law enforcement. Who would like that one? I'll throw that one first to the law enforcement, then we'll go to that.
Okay. So my understanding of the question is the dogs are outside dogs in the winter, but then they bring them in during the summer because of the heat.
And because apparently someone's called law enforcement and presumably they're under some pressure to do so.
Okay, and so the dogs are confused because they can't spend as much time as they want outside.
Yeah.
It would be my opinion that if the dogs have adequate shade and water, they could spend at least partial days outside in the summer. I am not a Great Pyrenees expert, so I don't know if shaving the dog is an option. Some dog breeds aren't recommended to be shaved, but certainly if that's not a problem for the Great Pyrenees, it might assist with the heat. But legally, the neighbors would have to have an officer come out and prove that something is detrimental to the dog's health to not let the dogs go outside at all.
Well, and presumably, if you're going to do outside time, you know, one would figure, you know, early morning and, you know,
evening,
late afternoon, early evening, when there's still a little bit of daylight. But, actually, this time of year, there's quite a bit of daylight. But that the temperatures are a little cooler and easier. I know that's when generally my wife and I walk our dog. Are there other recommendations for times that you might look for to see that your dog does get some exercise? Well, Darcy, I'll start with you.
Yeah, I think a lot of this is common sense. For example, you know, if we flip to the winter months with the extreme weather in the winter months, you know, there was the anti-tethering ordinance was put into effect that you have to you can't chain your dog overnight between 11 p.m. and 6 a.m. And that was really geared towards, you know, dogs that that really, you know, shouldn't be left outside when it's coldest at night in the winter. But on the flip side, you know, you think about in the warm summer months, and yeah, then you really should be bringing your dogs in the brutal heat of the day. So much of this is just, you know, common sense. And how would you feel out there, you know, chained in the middle of winter at 3 a.m.? Or how would you feel out there in the middle of summer chained outside at 2 in the afternoon? Mm-hmm. You know, dogs pretty much, you know, have a similar response to extreme temperatures.
We've gotten a question from a listener who didn't want to go on the air. You said, is there an ordinance in regard to how many dogs are allowed per household?
Not in Marion County, no. It's as many as you can properly care for.
Okay, and what's the standard then for properly care for?
It depends. It's different for every person. Darcy might be able to care for more than I can just because I don't like to get up early.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and how big your house is and all. I guess what I'm looking for is when you say properly care for, it means all of the things that we've talked about, that you've got to be able to provide fresh water for all of them, shelter for all of them if they're outside.
A clean living space, free of, you know, feces and urine. So it wouldn't be a crating situation where you have several dogs in a crate. They need adequate exercise. They need adequate out of their crate time.
And proper medical care. Mm-hmm. When the animal's ill or injured, that's being provided. And that is in the Indianapolis ordinances.
Mm-hmm. In addition to, you know, just regular vet care as far as your regular checkups and your rabies vaccine, that kind of thing. And that can be expensive if you start adding on multiple dogs. I personally have two.
Mm-hmm.
I'm good there. And then I foster animals. So that helps, you know, with the cost and gives me an outlet for more animals coming in the house. And my husband doesn't divorce me. So.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about taking care of your dogs during the hot summer months. If you'd like to join the conversation, Give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. That's what a listener named Kenny has done, and we're going to get his email in a second. Or you can reach out to us on social media. On Facebook, you can find us at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Kenny says, is there a general rule of thumb for when you should not walk your dog on asphalt or concrete? Basically, when is it too hot to
yes.
do that?
I actually just saw something on Facebook that was the perfect example. If you take your back of your hand and you put it on concrete and you can't leave it there for 5 seconds, or pavement, and you can't leave it there for 5 seconds because it's too hot, then it's too hot for your dog.
Okay. Arthur, so basically if you want to walk your dog in those circumstances, and is that, I mean, do we have an idea what the guidelines are rather than having to walk out every time and put the back of your hand on the pavement to check it? Is it like 80 degrees, 90 degrees?
I would say 80 degrees and sunny. You know, it shouldn't be a long walk. You know, I mean, walks in the grass, but a long walk on hot pavement when it's sunny and 80 degrees, I think you're asking for, you know, heat stroke if the dog's out there, you know, for more than, you know, just a short walk.
Especially if they're brachycephalic.
How far, how do we define short walk? Is it like half an hour or 15 minutes or...
Yeah, I'd say more like 15 minutes.
Okay, what we're trying to do is give guidelines.
And it can be different for different dogs. So, I mean, some athletic dogs who are used to the heat might want to go longer, whereas I have a little French bulldog who, with her smushy face, you know, looks like she's about to stroke out after 5 minutes. So she does. Dogs with the smush face are brachycephalic. They're going to be more susceptible to the heat. Okay. They're going to succumb to heat symptoms more quickly. And so you need to be a little more specific, more
sensitive
to their issues. So those are boxers, mastiffs, Boston Terriers.
And too, when you think about it, if you're walking your dog and you're sweating profusely, the dog can't sweat. He can only pant. So, you know, kind of use that as a guideline too. If you're becoming really uncomfortable, so is your dog.
How should you go about, and this may be a question, though, on those days, and we always have them here in Indiana during the summer months where it's 95 degrees and the humidity is desperately trying to find a way to reach more than 100%, and it's just brutal for almost every living creature. You know, particularly if you've got a young dog, there is a need for some sort of exercise that the walk often fulfills during cooler months. How should you exercise your dog so that it gets the kind of activity that the pet needs?
That's going to be your early morning walk. So just, you know, just before or during sunrise, when the weather hasn't really hit as warm as it's going to be. Or you can, you know, play fetch, have short games of fetch in the backyard. Look for unique ways. Sometimes occupying the mind with maybe a frozen Kong is a little, it's not exercise, but it will get the dog interested and active, occupied, so to speak, for that.
And we probably ought to talk, you know, since there are people thinking, you know, dog gets too hot, big deal, or whatever. What are the consequences for a dog overheating?
I mean, worst case scenario, the dog could die. But some of the symptoms to look for, you know, if they're just panting excessively, drooling, they kind of have a glazed look in their eye, kind of staggering, weak, rapid pulse. Those are some symptoms that it's, you know, it's becoming extreme. And worst case scenario, I mean, the dog could die of heat stroke.
And if you see any of those symptoms with your dog or presumably with another dog, whatever, how should you deal with them?
What's I mean, if it's becoming extreme, you know, eventually you'd want to get your dog to a veterinarian. But, you know, you would want to kind of gradually slow the dog down. So, you know, get them to drink water, ice cubes, apply, you know, cool, wet rags to their body. You don't want the water to be, you don't want to pour ice water on them or submerge them, but you want to gradually
cool their body down.
Bring
the body temperature down as quickly as you can without making it too abrupt.
Right.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about summer dog care here on No Limits. My guests are Dawn Kontos, who is with Indianapolis Animal Care and Control, and Darcy Kurtz, who is Vice President of Fido. I'm John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about summer dog care, about what's the best way to take care of your pet during these warm summer months, also what the consequences could be, legal and otherwise, for not doing so, for not taking appropriate care of your pet. My guests are Dawn Kontos, who is with Indianapolis Animal Care and Control, and Darcy Kurtz, who is Vice President of Fido, Friends of Indianapolis Dogs Outside. Jane, welcome to the program.
Hi, John. How are you today?
I'm doing well, thank you. What's on your mind?
Well, I was calling in. I'm the director of Indy Great Pyrenees Rescue, and I heard the comment about
That's the Jane this is. I know Jane. Okay.
Yes.
Hi, Jane. How are you? All right.
Possibly shaving your Great Pyrenees to keep them cooler, and actually that is the worst thing you can do. Their double coat is actually made to help cool them, just like it is in the winter to help keep them warm. So they also have a very fair skin tone, and they can get sunburned. So we actually have in our adoption agreement for our adopters that they are not allowed to shave their Great Pyrenees. Just for that reason.
Good to know. Now I'm more knowledgeable about Great
right.
Pyrenees. Thank you,
yeah.
Jane.
Well, thank you very much, Jane, both for calling and also for bringing us such good information.
No problem. I just wanted to try to prevent some naked Great Pyrenees out there so they can keep their dignity with their beautiful coats.
All right. Thanks very much for the call.
Thanks, John. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We also have a question from a caller who didn't want to go on the air. Says he or she was attacked by a dog as a child and is now terrified of dogs in public. Any advice on how to cope? Darcy, I'll start with you, I think, and then go to Dawn.
Yeah, I know that's a tough one. I've known a few people who have been in a similar situation, and well, you know, I mean, if people are being responsible, they're going to have their dog contained on a leash, so there shouldn't be any risk to the caller. You know, I mean, by law, they're either supposed to have their dog on a leash or be under, you know, voice control of the dog. But I don't know. I guess I'll turn that over to Dawn. I honestly don't know. I don't know what to tell the caller other than people should not be letting their dogs have access to the caller.
Okay.
If the goal is to slowly become acclimated to a dog, I would seek out a friend with a well-behaved dog or possibly an organization like Love on a Leash. They have therapy dogs, and they will occasionally be at places like libraries and where you can actually pet the dog. And working with a dog that's very well trained, I think might possibly feel more comfortable and begin to, you know, get used to having dogs around. I'm a big proponent of get back on the horse after you fall off. So my son was bitten when he was about 8 or 9, and he now volunteers at the shelter, and he's fine and walks dogs and likes the biggest dogs. So
it sounds like this caller, this listener was traumatized by the experience. And there are people who can say, I got bitten. It's sort of like getting hit during a football game. You just sort of expect it. There are others who say, oh, wow, I really got hit. And, you know.
Well, not knowing the level of her attack and how it all happened, I would say if they're interested at all in being around animals, those would be good suggestions, either friends with a well-trained dog or possibly seeking out visits with a therapy dog, and possibly even therapy with an actual licensed therapist to kind of, you know, learn what they can do.
Well, and that raises another question here, which is how should you approach a dog, particularly a dog that you're worried might be being mistreated and therefore, you know, may be somewhat defensive when you approach it anyway?
I would say you should let the dog approach you. That is the safest as far as interacting with an animal that you don't know. If you can convince them to come to you, it's a little better for the animal than it is to go at them. Darcy probably does this all the time. Yeah.
Well, are you referring to a stray dog or a dog that you sort of want to avoid?
I think
or a
in
dog
general,
that you...
and I'm trying to take this caller's question and, you know, in a circumstance where you've got a dog that might be skittish in any way for whatever circumstance, mm-hmm. I'm thinking more realistically, you know, that most dogs that at least I've interacted with in my life are sort of inherently friendly and they just want to come up and lap you. Generally, though, there are kinds of behaviors that you can avoid that a dog might perceive as threatening, and
right.
you will get that defensive reaction at
right.
that point.
And those behaviors are, you know, staring directly at a dog. They perceive that as a threat, approaching the dog front on. Usually, you know, if you kind of approach them sort of obliquely from the side, that's seen as more of a submissive kind of approach. And just really going slow. And that's something anybody, you know, that works with animals knows. If a dog is fearful, you just go really slow. And a lot of times the dog is going to calm down and, you know, and let you interact with it. But it's the kind of the fast approach, you know, a dog is going to see as a threat and, you know, which could trigger, you know, aggression in the dog.
How long does it take after you have rescued a pet that, you know, has been mistreated, you know, in that the, and my supposition here, and it may be a mistaken one, is that the folks who are leaving their dogs out, you know, 24 hours at a time, not worrying about water or the other basic necessities for life, probably aren't being real considerate of the pet in other ways, too, that very well might be a dog that has been beaten or abused in other ways. How long does it take an animal to recover from that and return to something resembling a gentle disposition? I'll start with Darcy.
Okay. I'd say it's really variable. It's amazing. Some of these dogs are so resilient, you know, that they've been treated so horribly. And, you know, you see them come into animal care and control, these confiscations, and the dogs love everybody. You know, it's so variable, just like people. And then there's other dogs that, you know, I've had fosters myself, most of them from animal care and control, that, you know, some of them have been so timid, and even as puppies, and even, you know, that you couldn't touch. And, you know, a few days later, they trust you. And then I've got a little dog now that I actually pulled from animal care and control, and I've had him for about 4 months, and I can still barely touch him. So mm-hmm. there's really a wide gamut. And I don't know, I think some of that is just genetic, and some of that is, you know, what kind of treatment they experienced.
Well, and Julie, our rescue coordinator at the shelter, she has a dog that has lived in her house for years that she still can't touch if she wants to. The dog, you know, is perfectly fine as long as she ignores her. She will come to her if she wants attention, but that's very rare.
Okay, so the scarring in that case was permanent.
Very severe. Mm-hmm.
But I do think most dogs come around to a certain extent.
Yeah.
You know, they eventually learn to trust you to so that at least, you know, they have a decent quality of life and you can interact to a certain extent. But other dogs are just so amazingly resilient that they just – you know, pretty much forgive mistreatment immediately.
I've gotten an email from a listener named Randolph, and if you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Randolph asks, are cats subject to the same laws as dogs?
In general, yes. We do have community cats in Indianapolis, so there are times when cats are allowed to live outside, whereas dogs would not be. Community cats, they may not be feral per se, but they're cats that have chosen for whatever reason to live outside and don't care to live with people in the homes.
Can I clarify? You mean
yes,
live outside
do.
And be free roaming?
Yes, free roaming. That's a very important part. They are not owned cats. They are literally community cats, so they're free roaming. They, if they are ear-tipped, which ear tip signifies that they have been spayed or neutered, then they are allowed to free roam. Whereas dogs, we would not allow free roaming dogs.
How do you make the distinction between community cats and feral cats?
It's generally community cats is really just a nicer term for feral cats.
Okay. And I would say feral cats are a subset of community cats. Feral cats are wild, untouchable cats. Community cats is a larger category that includes feral cats and friendly cats that live outside are unowned.
And so basically the only distinction is that there are times they can be outside, but in terms of heat, providing water, if you own a cat, all of the same rules apply. Then,
yes.
Right?
If you own a cat and it lives in your house, you are not allowed to let it roam at large. It has to have the same ID, permanent ID. It has to be cared for properly. Same concept as
rabies
a dog.
Rabies vaccinations.
What are the penalties for not doing? I mean, one of them I know we've made reference to is that your pet might be taken away from you. But, you know, given that these people, it sounds like, to get to that level, have to have demonstrated pretty clearly they don't care much about their pets anyway, that doesn't seem like that much of a penalty. Are there other...
There are tickets and fines. They do go on your record, so...
How large can the fine be?
I've seen him. It just varies with the person. If they have a lot of violations, it can get upwards of a couple $100s, even more if the animal's not spayed or neutered, doesn't have permanent identification, doesn't have its rabies vaccine. If it attacks someone, that's going to be a court issue. So that will be up to the judge at a certain point.
We are talking about the best ways to take care of your dogs in the summer. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hi there. Wow. I'm enjoying the show. I rescued a dog several years ago from the Indianapolis Humane Society, and she and I run a lot together. In the winter, I don't have a lot of worry. She seems to do just fine. And even in the summer, sometimes we'll run 14, 15, 18 miles. I carry water with her. We run up into Carmel, and they have lots of drinking fountains for dogs and things like that. But she loves to run so much that I sometimes get worried that she would run, you know, so she got exhausted by the heat. And now we've spent thousands of miles together, so I'm very in tune to her well-being when we're on the road. But is there any signs that I should be looking for on a dog that could possibly, could she just run herself until she got sick?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Chris, and I'm impressed by your dog's stamina.
I know, that's pretty incredible.
Yeah.
Sounds like she found the perfect owner.
Yeah.
Well, as I had mentioned before, probably the biggest danger in running in the heat would be heat stroke. And it sounds like you're pretty tuned in to her, signs and symptoms of any kind of issues. But, if it seems like, that she's just excessively panting and she seems uncoordinated and kind of staggering, not responsive. Those kind of things are signs of, possible heat stroke. So I would just, do what you're doing and just stay really, tuned in to how she's behaving.
Got a question from a listener who didn't want to go on the air. It says, can a fox be adopted?
I believe you require a permit from the Department of Natural Resources for that.
Okay, so that would be the
process.
We're
not adopting out fox.
Okay. No, but legally then it sounds like there's a process, but it's far more complicated than just buying a pet and bringing it home. Yeah. And then we've also gotten a Facebook message from a listener named Valerie. And if you want to reach us on Facebook, you can do so at NoLimitsWFYI. Valerie says that her husband and son were attacked by a dog last weekend. What can we do? This dog is a hazard. If there is an animal that is threatening safety, how do you deal with that, Dawn?
If an animal has bitten you in Marion County, you need to file a bite report with us. You can call us at 327-1397. That's our office line, 327-1397, to get that process started. We will need documentation of the wounds. We'll probably have an officer come out to talk to you. If you know the owner of the animal, that's certainly information that we would also need. But yes, if an animal breaks skin, we need to know about it.
Is there, what happens? Is it a first time? If there's a first time incident with that, is there a protocol? I mean, I would assume that if it's an isolated incident, that's one thing. But if it happens more often than that, you have to take some steps.
It depends on the severity of the attack. If it's just perhaps an accidental bite, or the person who was bitten feels like they may have caused the bite, that's certainly going to be taken into consideration. At a certain level of severity, it will again be up to a judge whether or not the owner can get the dog back.
And I probably should ask both of you, I know you've given the phone numbers real quickly. Do you have online presences too, places that people can reach you by email or, through your website? I'll start with you first, Darcy, and then go to Dawn.
Okay. Fido's website is fidoindy.org.
Fido, and that's F-I-D-O dot O-R-G.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And?
If you are looking to make a report about an instance, you need to call the Mayor's Action Center. That is 327-4MAC, 4-M-A-C, or you can go online at indy.gov. /MAC and file a report that way. If you're looking just to contact Indianapolis Animal Care Control, perhaps about adoption or volunteering or fostering or any other number of things, our website is indy.gov/ACCD, stands for Animal Control, Care and Control Division, sorry. We're also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, you name it, we're out there.
And what sort of things do you ask volunteers to do if people?
Generally, we'll start you with handling dogs, walking dogs, socializing cats, possibly doing laundry. If you love to do laundry, I can hook you up all day long.
Okay. And Darcy, I'm assuming Fido is looking for volunteers
as
well.
Yeah, we're a volunteer-based organization. We usually do start people at we have a large pet food pantry and that's usually kind of the first place that we have volunteers help us out. It's kind of a upbeat atmosphere. And then we have other programs, outreach programs, where we go out into the neighborhoods and help people. And that's for a little more experienced volunteers. We also, one thing that I didn't mention is we have a fencing program for dogs that are chained. Once we get the dogs spayed or neutered, we offer to put up fences for people to get their dogs off the chains. And that's another upbeat, kind of fun experience for volunteers that we always need help with.
And that will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank both of you, Darcy and Dawn. It's been a pleasure talking with you. I'd like to thank all of our listeners as well, particularly those who called in with such great questions. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.